Wine and Cheese presents the Uncorked Podcast.
Muffy Mendoza is a mama on a mission. She runs a support group of over 3,000 Black mothers called Pittsburgh Brown Mamas and hosts a premier website called brownmamas.com. Pittsburgh Brown Mamas is a monthly meetup to support one another in their motherhood journeys, host events, raise funds for worthy causes, and go about the real work of rebuilding Black communities. In addition to her calling to serve as an advocate for Black mothers, Muffy is a TEDx speaker and has spoken at various venues across the city of Pittsburgh with the message that family holds the key to unlocking answers to systemic poverty, miseducation, and economic depression in Black communities. In addition, she produces the annual show, The Brown Mama Monologues, to give other African-American mothers the opportunity to share their stories live on stage. If that's not enough, Muffy is a new author of a life guide for Black moms, The Brown Mama Mindset, a blueprint for Black moms on life, love, and home. The book focuses on helping Black moms to understand that motherhood is the course that will guide them toward becoming the game changers in their lives, homes, and communities. On this episode, I'd planned to pop the cork on successful strategies for the back-to-school season. But as you'll hear, this conversation takes a turn, and instead, we decide to pop the cork on what it means to be a mindful mama. Back to school season is pretty much upon us. I want to know, have you established any tried and true practices that you either begin right as the summer is winding down into back to school or at the start of back to school to make sure that the family is on track with entering the school year?
So I always love these opportunities to kind of talk to people about homeschooling and schooling and just in general the whole process of educating children. So my process for educating my children is probably a little bit more different than what people are used to, because we see education learning as just a part of life. So when we talk about getting ready to learn, I would say that the most important thing to do for your children is to put them in a space where they feel comfortable getting ready to learn. And so for my children, that just looks like taking extra time in the morning to make sure that we're on schedule. And we'll start doing that. Usually we start doing that around August. Around August, I start getting them up in the morning and making sure that they're on their schedule, and also just creating space for them to read, to write, to do whatever it is that they want to do to further their own learning processes, because I do not believe that children need to be, coerced to learn. I think children learn through play. They learn through everyday interactions. No different than when an ant rises in the morning, it rises to be an ant. Or a human being rises in the morning to be a human being. There is no coercion necessary. So I wouldn't necessarily say that we have a bona fide or solidified process as much as it is, it's just making space for learning in our household, which we do 24/7. So just to be honest, our learning doesn't stop during the summertime. We still have, like on our porch right now, we have an easel for our children if they want to paint. it stays there all school year long. The only time we bring it in is if it's a windy day, or if there's a snowstorm or something coming, then we'll say, hey, you know, go bring that in so that we can use it indoors. But I think it's really just about creating space for your children so that they know that any environment they're in, whether it's a schooling environment, a home environment, whether it's at their grandparents' house or at your best friend's house where you spend a lot of time, has space for learning. And that space for learning can look different depending on what your child likes to do. Your child might have a friend's house that they like to play video games at. Video games are so great for teaching. You know, a lot of parents get flack for letting their kids play too many video games, and I do believe that that's a real thing. I don't think kids need to do that every day, all day. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you ever really sit down and play video games with your kid, you'll see that they're learning immensely through these games. So if you're going to do anything in terms of getting your kids back to, quote-unquote, schooling, the best thing you could do is to create space for organic learning within their environment.
Ooh, I love that. And I love the concept of this continuous space for learning. But as a mom who's also their teacher of education, is there ever a time when you are Muffy the teacher versus Muffy the mom?
Well, I would definitely say that there's an old African proverb that I love, and it says, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. So I am mom, I am Muffy, I am myself all day in varying roles because I have homeschooling, I have brown mamas and all the things that I'm doing with that. And so there are different periods during the day where I'm taking on different hats, and my children are doing the same thing. I mean, kids also have multi-roles to play. They do have to play. You know, there are times during the day where my kids are doing chores, and then there's times of the day where they're working on their project. There's times in the day where there's kids coming knocking at the door, wanting them to come outside and play. So I think we are all doing that. But I think when you are in tune with your children and what they want to learn, they will show you when to be a teacher to them. Mm. It's not necessarily something that you have to be like, okay, now it's learning time for Muffy the teacher to come out. No, that's I don't believe in that. I really think that you can, if you are into present living, if you are being mindful, if you are being tuned in to what your children's real needs are, when they're ready to learn, when you have something to teach them, there will be an alignment that occurs.
Yeah.
And so if you're not having those types of experiences, I would really ask you to examine how mindful you are about your child's education. And I think that can kind of happen organically once you begin to understand that education is not 1, 2, 3s and ABCs.
Right.
Education is the process by which a cultural norms and societal needs are transmitted into the mind of a person. So education really has nothing to do with ABCs and 1, 2, 3s. And I really began to understand that when I brought my kids home to be homeschooled. Because what I figured out was that the 1, 2, 3s and the ABCs were the very easy things for them to grasp. It was more so what do I need to do for my future to be successful, or, you know, how do I handle conflict resolution when it comes about? Those are the difficult things to learn because they require mental fortitude. They require a stretching of the persona, as well as, you know, emotional stability and the ability to really sustain a mindset for a long period of time. Those are the hard things to learn. The ABCs and the 1, 2, 3s are the easy thing, you know, to learn. So I would definitely just say, in terms of, you know, ensuring that you are giving your child what they need at whatever time they need it, is just to make sure that you're mindful of what their actual needs are, mm-hmm. and to make sure that you are fluid enough so that when they are ready to learn something from you, when you have something to teach them, you know, the alignment occurs and that can happen.
I feel like you were just born with this insight. I feel like it was innate in you. What about the mothers who aren't as mindful yet but want to be? What types of things should they do What types of resources should they consume to get a better understanding and grasp on being mindful, being self-aware, and then being present for themselves and for their family?
I get questions from moms often about, moms will send me messages, you know, my kid's getting in trouble in school, what should I do? Or, you know, my kid is being bullied, or I don't know how to advocate for my kid. And the first piece of advice I always give, which sometimes gets a lot of flack, but once they understand it, they almost immediately come back to me and say, I know what you were saying, is to be patient with yourself. Mm. If you have a desire, if you have something you want to do with your life, whether it be you want to help your kid get an A on their test, or whether it be you want to become the PTA president. Denzel Washington said something that was profound to me, which is that he said, the fact that the desire, a good desire, has sprang up in your heart is evidence sent from God that it is already yours. Mm. So you just need to be patient with yourself. And I think as mothers, sometimes we take the role of being a mom as too, we compartmentalize it in a way that it's not meant to be compartmentalized. Motherhood, to be a woman is to be a mother, regardless of whether you've given birth or not. All women are born with the eggs that will be their children in their future. They're born with them. So you're born a mother, which means you are born innately possessing the skill sets, the characteristics, the qualities, the mind, the know-how, and the do to create the children that God destined them to be. So you just need to be patient with yourself, and you need to pray. You need to pray a lot. Pray for yourself. Pray for your children. Know what you're grateful for. And then as you do that, like I said before, that African proverb, when the student is ready, the teacher will be present. Now, the teacher doesn't always show up in the wearing the garbs that you want them to wear. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the teacher shows up in somebody you really don't like. Sometimes the teacher shows up as a person you don't know. Sometimes the teacher shows up as somebody who appears to be out of your reach. But I think for moms who are not as mindful, the most important thing that you do is be patient with yourself, pray that the answer will come, and then when the teacher shows up, don't forsake them.
Yeah.
Regardless of who it is, because the teacher may be somebody who you really don't like, who tells you something that you didn't really want to hear about yourself, and then that becomes a catalyst for you to learn more about yourself and therefore more about your children. And you had said earlier that I was born with this. I was not. And my teacher was not someone that I suspected. One of my best life teachers was, number one, my mother, who was, of course, a suspecting teacher. But my second life teacher was my father, who I did not know until I was 28 years old. And I did not want a relationship with him, but it just kind of came. And with that relationship came a multitude of lessons that I was able to also, once again, as I did with the lessons of my mother, utilize as a catalyst for learning more, for being patient with myself, for praying, becoming a better prayer, and all of these things. So if you're not mindful right now, just know, number one, the fact that you are thinking about being mindful means you have the capability. Mm-hmm. And number two, be patient with yourself, because we're all human beings and every blade of grass grows at its own pace.
I love it. This stuff is gold. It's gold. To the moms listening who are struggling with being present and being mindful, Muffy made a really good point about recognizing the teachers in your life when they come, but also being aware that the teacher may come in the form of your child, right?
Yes.
You know, there's that connection from conception. And, you know, children come into this world to teach us lessons, to show us about ourselves, to be our reflections. So working together with your child and letting them teach you certain things along the way, I imagine, is as priceless as any other person in this world being able to teach you.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Natalie. I can agree with that 100%. And I think sometimes it's hard for moms to learn from their kids because our society teaches us that our children are meant to learn from us. And I think that is true. There's a lot of lessons that you're going to, you know, put into your child and that your child is going to get just from your life alone. But your kid, like you said, that reflection, it's almost like watching yourself on reality TV. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no better experience than watching your child because, of course, yes, they are a reflection of all their experiences, but the majority of a child's experiences up until they're, you know, until they leave their house are coming from the parents. So, yeah, that's absolutely, Natalie. I echo every word you just said.
So you are the mother of three boys. How do you make sure that you differentiate your instruction to accommodate each of their education levels?
You know what? So that's a really interesting question, and that's something that I am still working out because my oldest son, who is 16, he went to school until he was in the ninth grade. We didn't pull him out until he got to high school. And so that is actually something that I'm still working on. I know that this year, because he is in the 11th grade, and we had initially planned to send him back to school this year, but the more we sat down and talked about it with him, the more it became apparent that that was not what he wanted for himself. Mm-hmm. And considering that he is 16 years old, what he wants for his life, and truthfully with all my kids, but a lot more so with him, what he wants with his for his life is, you know, that weighs heavily upon our opinion in terms of what we would, you know, ask him to do and what he wants to do and what we're going to allow him to do. And so since he made it very clear that he did not want to go back to school, now we are in this new space of, okay, he's in the 11th grade. At this point in his education, truthfully, there's not much more for us to teach him.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else that we would teach him in terms of ABCs and 1-2-3s would be redundancy of what he's already learned. I mean, everybody's been to 11th and 12th grade. What did you really learn in 11th and 12th grade? I feel like you learned more in 11th and 12th grade through the electives that you took.
Yeah.
Because those were your opportunities to learn, you know. So now we are basically in this elective process with him where it's like, okay, well, what are your electives? Because we can give you all the books on the Civil War and all the books on geometry that we want, and those things are great, and we want you to retain them. But at the same time, 11th and 12th grade, I feel like, are times when you learn socially. It's also a time when you learn about those life skills that mm-hmm. you're going to need so that you can make your transition into adulthood, you know. So that is something that we are still working on in terms of how to do that. And it's providing great experience for us because we have a 9- and 10-year-old who are only getting older. And with them, it's a lot more, I would say with the 9- and 10-year-old, there's definitely more structure there because they are kids. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a huge advocate of learning through play, but I also do, like I said, those ABCs and 1-2-3s, those fundamentals are still important. Our kids need to know to read. They need to know how to count their money. They need to know how to write a paragraph. And so they have a little bit more structure than the 16-year-old has. With him, it's more so he has a base curriculum. Mm-hmm. It's up to him to do it. And we are more so looking to just facilitate the other things he wants to learn, like taking driving lessons, like cooking, like, you know, learning how to write a check and these are your bills and how are you going to pay them, you know. So I would definitely say there's a little more structure with the younger kids than there is with the older one, just because he's about to make his transition into adulthood. So we have to facilitate that a little bit more. And that means more freedom of thought, freedom of action, freedom of, you know, what behaviors he chooses to engage in on a day-to-day basis, and also a lot of trial and error for him.
Yeah.
But that was one thing that we had to explain to him, you know, this school year, like, we're not going to force, we're not going to push. You are going to have to figure out what you want to do. We will facilitate what you want to do, but you're also going to have to begin to pay the consequences for whatever your actions are.
Mm. I love two things that stuck out for me. The first is that you're teaching your oldest son these life skills, how to cook, how to drive, how to write a check and balance a checkbook. All things that I said when I got to college, why didn't they teach us this in school? Why didn't they teach us how to file our taxes and, you know, things like that? So I think that's absolutely amazing. And I appreciate that you've incorporated that into the lessons that you're teaching your son. What I heard you say in the beginning, when you talked about having a conversation with him when he decided that he did not want to return back to school. And I think there is a lot of trust that is involved with being a mindful mama, right? I feel like this conversation is evolving into this mindful mama topic, which is perfect. But there's trust that is involved and necessary for raising capable young adults ready for the world. And being able to sit down with him to have the conversation, to outline the pros and the cons, to be able to give him a voice in his future, you know, recognizing that he's ready to make these types of decisions, I think is going to have the biggest impact on your son, knowing that his parents trust him to be able to start moving like an adult. You trust that the lessons you've taught him to date will, you know, manifest in a good way.
Absolutely. And I think that's necessary because so many of us go out into the world and we don't learn how to trust ourselves, like me, until we're over 30, 35, 40 even. We don't learn how to trust our own minds and our own instincts. And so much of my homeschooling journey with my kids has been about that. Transmitting that confidence that I have as a 35-year-old woman into my children, because I don't want them to be 35 before they trust themselves. Yeah. I want them to know early on that you instinctively, intuitively, with divinity, know what's good for you. You know that. You need to make decisions that you know are good for you. And the only way that I feel like humans are able to do that is through practice. We do it by doing something, making a decision first, and that's the part that we get delayed on because we can't make the decision because we don't trust ourselves.
Yep.
So I want them to be able to make a decision, move on it, and then not see the outcome as a success or a failure, but see the outcome as life progression. Like, it's not about success or failure, because regardless of, we say failure, but out of every failure is a learning experience. Mm-hmm. So there's no such thing. So life is about continual learning, and also trust yourself. Like, trust yourself to know that whatever the outcome is, this is an opportunity for you. Because this morning, as I was listening to my motivation, the guy said, life does not happen to you, life happens for you. Life is happening for you. Everything that is happening in your life is happening for you. The first step is to just make a decision. But that decision, I mean, the indecisiveness that most of us have, especially us African-American people, is profoundly a reflection of our community. Mm. I mean, that's because we can't make decisions. And when we do make decisions, we tend to make decisions that are not out of instinct and intuition and divinity. They're out of rush and panic and fear and trauma. And, you know, that has to come to an end. And I think the way to do that is for parents to begin to help their children to see the divinity within themselves. And thereby knowing that the decisions your child is making are coming from a place of wholeness and not a place of brokenness.
So I think that transitions into my next question, which is about how you honor yourself. What practices do you incorporate so that you are honoring? First of all, for those listening, Muffy is a mother of three boys. She's got a husband. So she's the only feminine energy in her household. So how do you honor your feminine energy? And what types of self-care practices do you perform to honor yourself and to give yourself the time and space you need?
So I am definitely the only female energy in my house. However, I am a boy mom. Like, now that I have my three boys and I don't have any plans on having any more children that biologically belong to me, I see why God made me a boy mom, because I love the boy things. So I'm outdoorsy. I love being outdoors. I think for me, self-care as a woman who is in the middle of raising children has become small things. Like, I love riding in the car and my hair and the wind in my hair. Mm-hmm. So I just make it a point, like, okay, mommy's going for a ride. I'm about to blast this Beyonce. I'm about to have all the windows down, and I'm going to just ride to Target, and I'm going to be jamming the whole way. That's self-care for me.
Right.
Self-care for me is the boys want to go out. They want to go hiking, or they want to go swimming, and mom's taking a book. Like, that's self-care for me. So I'm just, at this point in my life, knowing that I'm dead smack in the middle of raising kids, I'm not expecting myself to go out and get a full facial or have time every week to get a pedicure or, you know, do my makeup and primp and part, you know, with my hair all day. What it means to me right now is just finding small things that make me feel really good.
Mm-hmm.
and maxing that out. So it's really crazy right now. My husband, every time he gets in the car, I'm like, I'm going. He's like, why do you keep wanting to go? I'm like, because this makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes me feel good to be in the car with my husband, holding his hand, with my hair blown in the wind. Like, that makes me feel good. Or, you know, sitting on my porch with a book, swinging on our little swing, that makes me feel good. So I think for moms, especially moms who are like what I like to call in the dog days of motherhood, meaning in the days when you really got a lot of work to do. You may have soccer practice and baseball practice back to back. You may have homework and PTA back to back. Like, you got to find small ways. Mm-hmm. And also centering yourself. Like, I'm not a big fan of balance for moms. I like to say that all the time, like, balance, schmalance. There's mm-hmm. no such thing. Like, I cannot be balancing dishes and, you know, my teenage son at the very same time. It's not real. Something is always going to take up more time. I'm only one person.
Yeah.
So I like to say, don't get balanced. Get centered. Get centered. Find out what centers you. What is your center? What are the things you need in your life that help you to remain in a place of being in the middle? You know, and I think that is more important than balance, because you're not going to feel balanced when, you know, you got the last 5 pages of your book to write and your kid wants to go to the pool. You've got to make a decision. There's no balance in that. It's either or. So what you can do is try to find solace. Think of that place you like to go. Think of that, you know, that the wind in your hair when you were doing that thing that you may not necessarily want to do. So I think it's just about getting centered.
I love...
Get centered and figure that out.
I love the contrast, you know, instead of being balanced, being centered. But using the example that you just gave, you've got 5 pages left to write in your book, but your child really wants to go swimming at the pool. You're right. There is no balance in that. It's one, you decide one over the other. How would you then center yourself in that scenario?
Don't live in the future. So I would say make the decision based on not dragging yourself into the future.
Mm.
So when I would look at that situation, I would say to myself, which one can I do later and it's not going to kill me? I'm not going to have this next opportunity to take my kids to the pool. They might be 18 tomorrow. I may look up tomorrow and they're 18. But I can always write the last 5 pages of that book. And then I center myself in right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right now, my kid wants to spend time with me. And anybody who has a teenager knows that at some point, your kid is getting to the point where they don't want to spend time with you anymore. But my kid, at this very moment, wants to spend time with me. So I'm going to take them up on that. Okay. I'm going to take them up on that opportunity to spend time with me. And while I'm doing it, I'm not going to drag myself into the future, meaning I'm not going to be thinking about, oh, I could be doing this. No, right now I'm doing this, and mm-hmm. this is the only thing I'm doing. And when I get to that, I'll get to it.
I love it. It all circles back to being present.
Mm-hmm.
Being present. I love it. So in addition to your title as wife and mom, you lead an organization for mothers in the Pittsburgh area, and you're branching out. We're speaking that into existence, but you're branching out to be able to reach other moms beyond Pittsburgh. Tell us more about Brown Mamas, how it got started, and what's the intended purpose.
Brown Mamas actually came out of my need for community. I had moved back to Pittsburgh. I'm originally from Pittsburgh, but I was living in New York for 5 years with my husband and my children. And I knew that when I was in New York, I was a member of Mocha Moms there. And so I was able to have a small little community of moms who were like-minded. And when I moved back to Pittsburgh, I didn't have that. So my very first thought was, oh, I'm going to create a Mocha Moms chapter here in Pittsburgh. But Pittsburgh is a different type of city in terms of socioeconomics and workplace and all those things that determine what people do in their everyday life. It's just a different culture. And most of the moms here are working moms. So when I came here as a stay-at-home mom here to Pittsburgh, it was like, ain't nobody staying at home but you. So the Mocha Mom thing was out because it just couldn't be real here because this is a blue-collar city. And so I ended up getting a part-time job because I needed something to do, and I just wanted to, I needed to find my people. So I ended up getting a part-time job working in radio because that's what I've always done. I'm a communicator at heart and a journalist by trade. Mm-hmm. And so I started meeting people, and they're like, and I'm like, we need to start some type of mom group because we need to be able to get together and have spaces that are just for moms where we can communicate and talk about all the problems we have as moms and work them out amongst each other. And so I started a blog with a good girlfriend of mine who also wrote the preface to my book. Me and her started Brown Mamas, me and Mrs. Diamante Walker. And it just kind of went off from there. I mean, it was almost as if nobody in the city of Pittsburgh had ever talked about Black motherhood in that way, about the realness of it, about it being hard, about, you know, just being real about motherhood. It hadn't mm-hmm. happened. So people, it just took on. It was like fire. It was like fire catching the grass or hay, and it blew up just kind of overnight. And so I just started building this community with the thought in mind that I really wanted to create a power base for Black mothers, because I feel like Black communities at this time are not necessarily able to meet the tangible social and mental health needs of Black mothers. Mm. And so that's why I created Brown Mamas, is that I just really wanted a space for where moms could be transparent, but also where we could call on each other as sisters, because, you know, unfortunately, most Black communities no longer are in that space where you can go to somebody's house and borrow some brown sugar or be like, listen, I need somebody to babysit my kids for 5 minutes so I can go to this job interview, or, mm-hmm. you know, just what are the tangible needs that mothers have. And so now Pittsburgh Brown Mamas has kind of blossomed into this, and it's just a Facebook group. That is the craziest thing. So we were just a Facebook group, and now moms are like sisters. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have moms who, I need a car seat, can somebody give me a car seat? And three moms will be like, oh, we all got a car seat, oh, or we'll all send you, you know, $20 on PayPal, mm-hmm. if you can get a car seat, or, you know, who's going to the pool this weekend? Let me meet up. I'm about to leave out to go to the pool with one of my girlfriends I met through Pittsburgh Brown Mamas. So now it's just become this really awesome community of connection where we basically have a small community for Black moms, and it's just for Black moms. And so that's just become the beauty of it. And out of that, like, I call myself, I'm a champion for Black motherhood. Mm-hmm. Like, I hate the negativity and the stereotyping that comes with being a mother in the Black community. And my job, I see it as my divine purpose here on earth, is to ask Black mothers, invite Black mothers to enjoy their motherhood journey and to realize that it doesn't have to be all pain and sorrow and hard work, but this is your one opportunity mm-hmm. to really, really have an impact on somebody's life, because your child is the only opportunity you're ever going to get to hand walk somebody through life. Like, nobody else is giving you that. I don't care how many life coaches you are. Mm-hmm. Nobody else is going to be like, you know, here's your life. First of all, I'm going to give you your life.
Right, right.
And then I'm going to help you figure out what are the rules of engagement in your life. Like, nobody, you won't get that opportunity anymore in any other circumstance in your life. And so I just want moms to be transparent with each other about what they're going through so that we can all live our best life while we're raising our kids, and also to have that reliability, that dependability. And so from that, I was able to do a TED Talk on Black motherhood. And then I was able to, I wrote a book this year, The Brown Mama Mindset, which focuses on really just giving Black mothers a set of principles that they can utilize in everyday life. And my book was featured at the Essence Festival, so that was awesome. And just all kinds of greatness, because I just feel like this is something that needs to be talked about, Black motherhood and how we do this in a way that is fulfilling for us, but also how we can create community. How can we tap back into creating that community that is so essential for raising children?
For all of those listening, if you ever wanted to know if Black Girl Magic had a face, I imagine it looks like Muffy Mendoza. I think that just hearing your story, I heard, you shared this with me when we were at dinner in Pittsburgh. And I think this is one of the reasons I connected with you so strongly, is because our stories have been very similar. You know, we birthed these communities out of a personal need. And ladies listening, I want you to realize that it's self-serving, but in the right way. If you know there's a need, if you have a pressing need that's personal to you, know that it's also likely personal to other women or other people.
Absolutely.
So don't just sit on it, explore it, and share it. Because just like Muffy through Brown Mamas, just like me through Wine and Cheese, just like Shanae Johnson, who's been a former guest on the podcast, and Wife Diaries, all of these organizations were birthed from a personal need, a void. And we said, you know what? Now that we got it, we're going to share it. And when you tap into those things, and I've told you all my story about how for a long time, you know, Wine and Cheese was just going to be this group of 11 women. And, you know, I was telling a girlfriend about it, and she said she wanted to start one, and I told her no. And how I was checked really quickly about how could you sit on something that has been so helpful to you and so helpful to the women that meet in your living room every month? Why would you not share that? And as soon as I was able to relinquish control over an idea, a concept that was not my own, that was gifted to me, I was able to see, wow, just like you said, Muffy, it was like fire catching to hay. It just blew up. It just blew up. So ladies, be the conduit for someone else's healing, breakthrough, insight. That's what we are on this earth to do. And so Muffy, I celebrate you for acting on that personal need and sharing it with the women in Pittsburgh. And now through your podcast and through your blog, through your book, you're being able to touch Black mothers all over the country and the world. And so I celebrate you. I'm so glad.
And I celebrate you, Natalie, because like I said, I've been sitting on the idea of thinking of doing chapters for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I don't think I'm going to be able to do this somewhere. And after that talk I had with you, it really made me expand my mind into, okay, it's great. This might be something that I can actually do. This might be doable. So I just think it's awesome that you are doing what you're doing. And, you know, I met Tia here. As a matter of fact, I'm about to go out with, I should probably put her on. Another Wine and Cheese member is here at my house right now.
Hey, Tia.
And we are actually about to take our kids to the pool together.
Awesome.
So, you know, it's just great to see other Black women trying to create these communities, because this is really where Black girls shine at. We shine in creating community. This mm-hmm. is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this has been a part of our culture for so long. You know, African women, that is what we do. We create community.
Yep. We got to go. But I want you to share with the listeners, you know, if we want to get in touch with you, if we want to follow your blog or any of the events you're putting on, we didn't even get to talk about the Brown Mama monologues, but listen, ladies, this woman is really doing it big. So, Muffy, tell us how we can keep in touch with you and up to date on all that you're doing.
Okay, so we didn't get to talk about the Brown Mama monologues, but I do want to let you ladies know, because I know you're in cities and states all over the U.S., that we are, the Brown Mama monologues is an opportunity for Black mothers to be transparent and take the stage and give their unique motherhood stories. And so we are actually taking this show on the road this year.
Oh, nice.
We did our first show last year, well, this year in 2018 in May on Mother's Day weekend here in Pittsburgh. We had an audience of over 230 people. And this year, in 2019, we are going to be doing another show here in Pittsburgh, but we are also going to be doing what I'm calling mini shows, Black Motherhood Exposed, in Columbus and in the DMV area. So if you have a story you want to share, if you have a Black mothering experience that is inspiring, that is crazy, that is lovely, that you want to share, please reach out to me and let me know, because I'm looking for other cities to do these Black Motherhood Exposed shows in. And I would love, love, love to hear more about you and your journey. You can find more about me on brownmamas.com, which brownmamas.com is the online housing for Pittsburgh Brown Mamas. But if you just want to find out about me, you can go on muffymendoza.com too. And thank you so much, Natalie, for having this platform, for allowing me to come on here and share my story and share what I'm doing. And I just hope and pray that it continues and that more women, you bring more women on, and that we can learn from other women's collective experiences, because that's how we learn. That's how we grow.
Amen to that. I touch and agree. I think that God has his hand on us and our organizations, our missions, and they will continue to grow and to prosper the way in which he wants them to go.
Ladies, it is my hope that you were informed and inspired by that last conversation. And until we speak again, feel free to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at For Every Wine. That's FOREVERYWHINE. And if you're ready to join us by starting or joining a local branch of Wine and Cheese, where you are welcomed in a safe space with like-minded women to whine about the stress of your life, yet cheese or smile about your blessings, feel free to visit our website, foreverywine.org. Click on the Join Us tab, and we can get you started within a local branch. Until next time, remember, for every wine, there is a cheese.